Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Saubona. In Senegal, Nangadef. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif. Join me and my co-host Kareem Hamid every Wednesday morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on the Female Solution Radio Show as we explore that relationship that is the foundation for our society, the relationship between men and women, husbands and wives. Join our discussion as we seek to repair broken family ties and rebuild our community. Listen online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to our host. Or you can join us live on Facebook at www.facebook.com/the-female-solution.
Grand Rising, and thank you all for joining us on this Wednesday morning on the Female Solution Global Radio TV show. And we'll be joined by our co-host and our American Muslim 360 family in just a moment. And later in our show, we're going to be joined by one of the candidates for mayor of the city of Chicago. We're going to be bringing you some one-on-one interviews with those who are seeking to de-seat the current mayor, Lori Lightfoot, believing that their leadership promises much more. We know our cities are plagued with issues of crime, violence, poverty, homelessness, distress. And what do we do to solve these problems? Well, it's going to take more than just one person to wave a magic wand and make it all go away. They've got to have some organizing skills, some coalition building skills, and they've got to have some compassion. We can't keep criminalizing people for not having money, and that's been at the root cause of all of the distress throughout our nation. Chicago is an international city, and that means someone must have an international perspective as well as a local hold on how these problems are affecting the average citizen and how those groups who have presented solutions can be incorporated into solving the problems. So today we're going to be talking to 6th Ward Alderman of the City of Chicago, Roderick Sawyer, and his vision for the City of Chicago if elected mayor. We'll be right back with our co-host, and we want you to call in 515-605-9325. Press 1 when you're ready to speak. Let us know that you have something to say, and we'll give you an opportunity to ask your questions. We'll be right back after this quick break, so stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back in a moment, so stay with us.
Quite ready, but I have an important message to share with you before she comes on the line.
We'll talk about it.
Don't
touch
that dial. We'll be back in a while.
Politics, religion, economics, culture, and we'll take a look at everything from whether or not corporal
humanity, may we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of
look for our upcoming
Intelligentsia,
book, Growing
number
Up
one
Charles,
radio station in
the
nation,
personal story about our lives growing up
America
in Maple Park on Chicago's South Side.
Model Community National Resource
Collective,
the Volunteer
I'm
Human
Cheryl,
Resource Network,
and I'm
Scholarship, the Learning
Lab,
Ambassador, National Leadership
on Facebook,
Council,
and
Internship, Leadership
channel,
Development,
Green
the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute. May we share completely humanity.
We'll be joined by our co-host, Kareem Lee, and our American
God's
Muslim
peace,
family.
God's love, God's
and
compassion.
We want to also hear from you. Give us a call, 515-605-9325 or 515-605-9899.
And we are back. You're listening to The Female Solution.
And we're back.
Yours truly, Kareem Hamid and Naima Latif. I'm going to open up her mic and see if she's ready to begin the broadcast. Inshallah.
Yeah.
Assalamu alaikum. Alhamdulillah. There you are.
Wa alaikum assalam. So grateful to have you with us today and the American Muslim 360 family joining us to really take a look at what we should expect from leadership. You know, we live in cities that have really gone through some difficulties. And every year when we have elections, everybody's blaming each other for the crime and the violence. But we know the problem is much deeper than that. And in our second hour, we're going to be joined by one of the candidates for mayor of the City of Chicago, whose father was a mayor. He's the son of Mayor Eugene Sawyer, who came into that position during a lot of turmoil right after the death of the first African-American mayor, Mayor Harold Washington. And he instituted a lot of things, Mayor Eugene Sawyer, in terms of connecting Chicago with Ghana as a sister city. I remember a lot of those things that were done during his tenure. But because people were still in such grief over Mayor Washington and the way things happened in this city, there was a lot of controversy, where, of course, his son followed in his footsteps in becoming an elected official over one of the city wards, and is now seeking to become mayor. But we know in our cities it takes a whole lot more than just politics to fix these problems. And during these debates and forums that the community has been having with candidates that are running, the biggest issue is crime. And you have people who are saying, well, we need more police. And then we have people saying we need better trained police. And then there are people that are saying, well, no, what we really need are more jobs so that people don't commit crime, so we don't need as many police. So we're going to hear from an alderman who believes he has some issues. But I wanted to get your take on things because I really think leadership is going to have a different spirit. I believe we cannot criminalize people for not having money. We cannot criminalize people for not having education. We cannot criminalize people because they're taking desperate moves when no alternatives have been given to them. And we definitely cannot exploit people by creating means of constantly fining them for every little thing and then punishing them when they can't pay it. And that just keeps the stress level so high that people end up turning on each other and exploding. And that creates a lot of the domestic violence. So I think leadership has to have an insight. I believe they need to have a spiritual insight into what's plaguing humanity and look for holistic approaches, not just, well, do we spend more money and put more police in our schools and put more police on the buses and trains and put more police on the corners. When you brutalize people, you can't then beat them down and make them take the abuse. There's something fundamentally that has to change, and all of our cities are going through this same thing. So in your opinion, what is the insight? What's the spirit that a person who's going to be in a position of leadership should have and display? And how do we recognize that they have the kind of sensitivity to really fix the problem in a bold, courageous way?
Well, first, a person vying for leadership or in leadership should know the people that they are representing, they are attempting to lead, and knowing knowing your constituency is more than just knowing their name and their address. Knowing the conditions that they are living in, that they are living under, knowing the environment that they that is shaping them. For me, crime is a product of poverty. Poverty can produce crime. And we have to know what has happened, not just in your city or in your ward, but what has happened across this country. There has been a major shift of manufacturing being moved from this country to the developing world and to Asia. Those were manufacturing production jobs that for a long time had served this country and the cities in this country. That has been a major shift. There are manufacturing plants that sit empty, dilapidated, crumbling. I took a tour via YouTube of major cities condition of what has happened there. Gary, Indiana, Newark, New Jersey, cities in Mississippi, cities in California. There are almost whole towns that are vacant because there was a manufacturing facility that afforded the tax base and jobs for the people that lived in those areas. Just take a tour through major cities where manufacturing supplied income You see devastation. You see, you know, there's an overabundance of labor when labor is no longer needed. When high intensive labor is no longer needed. So my challenge to those that are seeking to represent an area or represent a segment of this society, that they be able to address those issues, and don't just blame the citizens that live in that area because they are left without sustenance, without the a tax base has, and a large tax base have moved from out of major cities to what we call suburbs now. It's most manufacturing left major cities. And not only did they leave this country, they left major cities behind and took that huge tax base with them that supports the public services that serve the inner city. So this is a large problem, but we have to know what environment we're operating in and have a history of what has happened. Why is it like this? Know that there is such a thing as cause and effect, and we're living in the effect of a cause.
Yeah, yeah.
So this huge homelessness now. On that tour, I looked at San Francisco, Los Angeles, every major city, huge homelessness. Those people did not choose that. Something has occurred.
Right.
That removed them from out of the housing market. So whoever is running to represent a constituency, they need to know that history. They need to know what has took place over the heads of those that are suffering in these major cities. Solution what they have to address these needs. I'll stop right there, my sister.
Well, I definitely agree. I think you have to look at the whole system. Like you said, when things shifted out of the inner cities, the manufacturing that employed so many of the people, we're in a global economy. And when one city that has been the hub of a major industry suddenly is not, unless the leadership is able to attract something else, then the predictable result is going to be the people aren't going to have a means of earning an income. And that does cause crime to increase. So it would seem like the business industry has to have a relationship with government, because if you own a plant and you make a business decision to relocate overseas and you know that you represent 100 jobs in a particular neighborhood, that neighborhood is going to be decimated. And unless there's a long-range plan and there's just some kind of strategic planning, then that neighborhood is going to then deteriorate and become crime-infested. And because we haven't had foresight when we do these things, we keep thinking the answer is, well, let's just bring in more police. And so now we've made the criminal justice system the new industry to take care of people who are desolate because of the absence of the jobs that employed them and help them maintain themselves. We can't look at things in isolation, and that is the problem that we've seen. So leadership has to be able to have the global perspective to see how everything is connected. The same thing with schools. We had a major catastrophe, really, when 50 schools were closed in the Chicago area, and many of them in African-American and Latino communities. And the result was that children then have to go across neighborhoods where it's not safe. You had rival street organizations, and children were afraid. And in the school where I graduated from, Finger High School, top school while I was going there, but it deteriorated into one of the schools where there was a lot of fighting because you had children that had to now attend that school from another neighborhood. And now everybody in the world knows about the young man who got beat to death, the honor student who got beat to death by students. And it was right around the time that Chicago was negotiating for the World Olympics. Well, we lost that bid because everybody was disgusted after they saw that story and they thought that place is too violent, which it is. But that had an impact because, you know, the mayor had started revamping various areas in the downtown area, preparing for the Olympics that we didn't knew we were going to win. And they started building new apartment complexes and shopping complexes, just anticipating we're going to have all this global influx of traffic and tourism and all that. Well, it didn't happen because we had violence. And it affected the world's view of the city. Since when people perceive that there is killing, they're not going to come, even if you have the greatest monuments and art and entertainment, people aren't going to want to come if there's always stories about somebody being killed or robbed. And that's what a lot of our cities are experiencing. So the person who takes leadership in the city has to see how all of these decisions are connected, and all of the people are affected by business decisions that are made, by decisions to provide skills. And it's not just enough to train people in skills to then employ them in the jobs that are needed to be done. There's a lot of infrastructure work that needs to be done. I mean, I always get nervous when I travel over a bridge or an overpass and wonder how steady is it, when's the last time it was repaired. Well, that's work that can be done. So if you have people who need work and you have work that needs to be done, why can't we simply put that together so that everybody's working in an area that is needed? There's so many other things. It's not as though there's not things that don't need to be done. It's somehow the thought of putting the money into the things that need to be done and then hiring the people who need work to do it and training them to do it, somehow we haven't been able to make those things come together. Now, I've heard excuses, I don't know, excuses, reasons, or whatever. Well, too many people are on drugs. They can't pass a drug test to even get hired for the jobs that are available. That could be thing that is having an impact. Too many people are illiterate, can't read. Okay, well, that could be a thing that has an impact. So what's at the root cause of that? Are people's behavior just too dysfunctional, too erratic, too unpredictable, they're undisciplined? Okay, that could be a factor. So where do you repair that? Is it what's happening? Is it in the homes? Is it we have too many generations of distressed families where people now don't have the skills to be able to work together in partnership to provide a stable, nurturing environment from which to send forth children who are emotionally balanced, capable of functioning in a society in a calm and peaceful manner? And is that something that a mayor can fix? Or is that something that a mayor needs to ally with all the various agencies that address these things and empower them to work on these problems?
You mentioned something that has been expressed at the level of federal government. The water systems in this country is failing. Jackson, Mississippi, there's a whole town with unclean water. Flint, Michigan, the whole water system is lead pipes. And I'm quite sure that those are not the only water systems that need to be replaced, not tinkered with, but totally replaced.
Right.
We have heard that we need to rebuild the infrastructure of this country. The majority of our systems were built around the turn of the in the early 1900s.
They're old.
We have sinkholes in the middle of major streets because huge pipes are failing. Those pipes were laid in 1910 or somewhere along.
Oh,
eventually, we have to rebuild. We cannot compete with China on the modernization of our ports, our seaports. They have built a state of the art, cutting edge system of ports around China, and we're still operating with this a wharf system down on the wharf. You know, there's so much that needs to be rebuilt. Now, you know, they can find money to increase law enforcement, to arm law enforcement. And they can find money for our military industrial complex. Choose some in war making and in law enforcement. I believe if more of the funds was invested in this country, in rebuilding the infrastructure and rebuilding the people. Because people need income. That's a major task. That's a major job that would employ I don't know how many citizens and revitalize our financial situation, house by house, family by family. These are major issues that needs to be addressed. We have crumbling bridges. You are so correct. You feel nervous crossing over a bridge when I have seen reports of rust under the girders of old buildings, rust and it's crumbling. So these are decisions that need to be made. Now I know mayor, these are our major concerns, I'm quite sure. But I believe the mayors of these major cities, they have an organization of mayors, and these are some of the subject matter that they should discuss and how they can put pressure on the federal government to give them the funding that's needed to rebuild the infrastructure of these major cities.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I went to, first time I went abroad, when I went to Liberia for the World Conference of Mayors, and these are some of the issues that are talked about worldwide. You know, when we look at how do you develop better global trade, streets? How do you make sure that the citizens in your city are able to provide what your city needs with their skills? Because if you have products and services that are being manufactured and being sent abroad, they need to be of high quality, which means your manufacturing needs to be up to par. And like you said, you know, the shipping industry, you know, all of these transportation and transport systems, everybody's needs to be up to par. You know, sure. Trucking industry. I mean, you know, when you're transporting goods across the country. And, then, you know, there are a lot of people became more aware of how that affects the economy when, you know, I think there was a big truckers strike, you know, when they had differences of opinion about the COVID shots and the requirements, and, you know, and you realize, well, if the truckers stop driving, we don't have businesses that have supplies. So everybody has an impact. Everybody's industry affects the whole. And you can't arrest your way out of a problem of deprivation of people of access to goods and services and access to money. And they get upset and they make bad choices. And just having police to quell the frustration, that's not fixing the problem. And too many leaders have been thinking, well, if we just get more police, that's not it. Remove the reason why people are angry and exploding, and you won't have that problem. So that's one of the things we're looking at, talking to Alderman Roderick Story, who's going to be joining us at the top of the hour. And as the son of a mayor, I'm sure he's had an up-close and personal look at what it takes to run a city government and the global ties that mayors do have. We look at it at the local level, but really you got to look at the world. When you are running a city, you have to look at the world, because everything happening in the world is affecting your city. And right. How do you make those ties?
Some mayors have visited foreign countries in hopes of attracting business or industry to their city.
Yes.
You know, that they have, some have done that. And you're so, we're all interconnected, but if you want to suppress crime, then you must address poverty and illiteracy and a lack of education.
Yes. Yeah.
To me, poverty first. Johnny can't learn if he's sitting in a classroom and his stomach is growling.
Right.
Susie can't learn if he's hungry.
Right.
You know? Just the basics, some of the basics that's needed for human beings. Just supply the basics. But because to address the issue of lack of sustenance and being education, because you, matter of fact, you can't blame a man if he's hungry and he steals a loaf of bread. You can't hold.
That's right. Well, he's supposed to do. Yeah.
Right.
What other choices have you given?
So, and here's one more thing. Business should form a partnership with the government, city, ward, whatever. There's a phrase used at the federal level, and that phrase is to promote the general welfare. Promote the general well-being. That's what they are saying. So there needs to be a civic concern and a civic partnership between and the city, business, and the region that they're in. There needs to be a civic concern, a civic partnership, and if they could work in conjunction with each other to promote the general welfare, the condition of the people that
right.
live in those areas.
Right. That's
to,
what that,
and, yes. We can't go on having an adversarial position between
that's
consumer
it.
And producer. We both
that's
need
right.
each other.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Well, we've got to take a break. And when we come back, we want to hear from you all. And we want you all to get your questions ready because people who want to lead our city, our nation, they need to have a vision and they need to have a greater understanding of how we are all connected. There is no us versus them. It's all of us. We're all in this together. How do you make all the parts fit? And of course, I agree with our brother Kareem. We cannot be adversaries. We cannot see each other as the enemy. That doesn't work. So how do we make the whole work together? We'll be joined at 8 o'clock hour. Of course, that's the 9 o'clock hour for you all on the East Coast and the 7 o'clock hour for you all on the West Coast. We will be joined by Alderman Rod Sawyer, who is running for mayor of the city of Chicago among 9 candidates who are challenging the incumbent, Lori Lightfoot. And she's been blamed for everything from, you know, the crime in the streets to the homelessness and everything else. But these were issues that already existed before she got there. So who can do something different to change the outcome? Well, we'll be talking to 6th Ward Alderman Roderick Sawyer at the 8 o'clock hour. And we want you to call in 515-605-9325 or 515-605-9891 and press 1. Light your number up on our switchboard. Let us know. Got your hand up. You have something to say. And we will be right back after this quick break. So we want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back in a moment. So stay with us.
Tune in to Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green on Thursdays at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear great topics and stories on grief and turn you into victory. Join Dr. Debbie Green to listen to stories of triumph and learn how to overcome. You are not alone in your life, and there is hope in the darkest hour. This is your time to learn strategies and solutions to improve your life. It's your time. So join Dr. Debbie Green with Soulful Solutions and call in on Thursday at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time at 515-605-9325 with comments and questions. Look to hear from you real soon.
Taxes are higher than ever. Every day, thousands of our residents leave Chicago to shop in Indiana. Jobs are being lost, and businesses are relocating. Let's find a way to lower our taxes to encourage residents to continue living and shopping in our city. Let's rebuild. Let's restore Chicago. Vote for me, for mayor of the city of Chicago, and I will work hard to find solutions that matter. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for Mayor.
Oh man, God sent the monthly sun bill today. This sunlight is really expensive, especially during this season. I'll probably have to work overtime to pay it.
Well, you better pay it on time. We don't want the sun to go out and we're sitting up here all day in the dark.
Wouldn't it be terrible if God charged us for sunlight? Well, thank God, the light and heat from the sun is free. So why are we paying such high bills for the energy we use in our homes? Because we don't know how to use solar energy, the free energy from the sun. You can convert your regular home to a solar energy home and save tremendously on your electric bill. Take a look at your electric bill. Wouldn't you like to reduce or possibly even eliminate that cost altogether? Let one of our solar consultants show you how. Call today, 312-849-3456, and schedule a free consultation. That's 312-849-3456.
TV show. I'm Naima Latif, and at the top of the hour, we will be joined by Alderman Roderick Sawyer, who is one of the 9 candidates running for mayor of the city of Chicago.
And, hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world. Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
You too, then. See you soon.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, hosts John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference, too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection. Yes, and we are back, and I believe we're back with our American Muslim 360 family, and we are looking for you to add your perspective as we take a look at this very challenging position of mayor at any major metropolitan city. It's a challenge, but leadership requires vision and seeing how all of us are part of the whole. So I want to share with you all, hopefully sound works okay. We're going to share with you all a portion of our guest's response at a town hall meeting of the Chicago Mayoral Forum held at the new Mount Baptist Church. A few weeks ago, and many of the candidates addressed some of the major issues, again, crime, violence, poverty, housing, all of these things that all tie together. And they do all tie together, which is what's important, that anyone running a city has to see how all of it does, in fact, affect the other. If a major industry leaves and people are unemployed, if they were paying on a 30-year mortgage and they got 20 more years to go, it's quite likely they could lose their home or get evicted from an apartment if they're paying rent, or lose the car that was their means of transportation to and from work if they don't have the money for a car note. And their children could have difficulties in school. As Green was talking about, if you have families that are, as they say, food insecure, meaning you don't know where your next meal is coming from, you're sending a child to school that's hungry. And there's a whole lot of children that were heavily dependent on breakfast programs and free lunch programs because that might have been the only stable meals that they had. And when you have children that are hungry, and then let's say they got a toothache and there's no money for dental care, there's no dental insurance, so they got to go to school and they're in pain. Maybe they need corrective lenses, the eyeglasses, but there's no money for an eye doctor, so they're trying to strain to see the board or whatever, or see whatever visual aid that the teacher is presenting, but they can't see it because their eyes are blurry because they can't get glasses because they don't have money. And maybe they're angry because they don't get the praise from their teacher because they're not answering questions correctly because of all of these other issues. And so they get angry at the child who is excelling, and then they become the bully because they're mad because this student is smart. Because, I mean, maybe their family's working. They had a good meal. You know, they're not in pain. They can see straight, you know, so they're doing well. So now the child who's going through distress gets angry at the child who's doing well, and next thing you know, you got bullying issues, and you want to beat up this person because you're jealous because the teacher praised them, didn't praise you. Happens all the time. So all these little underlying issues that cause conflict. And then what do we want to do? Well, you know, the child falls, so now we got to suspend them from school. And so now they're home alone, or, you know, or the parents are out either trying to work or not working or whatever the case may be. But the bottom line is they're not in school. We got time to do wrong, got time to go and rob, you know, got time to go and burglarize. One thing leads to another. The answer isn't, well, let's just get more police. No, let's fix the problems that cause the problem. But a leader has to be able to see it. They have to be able to see the connection.
Underlying cause.
Yes, the underlying causes, that's what a leader has to be able to see so that they can know how to fix the problem. Let's fix the problem, not fix the blame. My brother Jonathan Jackson, who's now Congressman Jackson, always says that, which makes a lot of sense. Let's fix the problem and not fix the blame. Because pointing fingers doesn't make the problem go away, and it just makes it escalate. So if we are not willing to look at the whole situation, we're not ever going to be able to fix it. So I'm going to see if I can play this. Let me know if this sound comes through here. We're going to play a little bit of what Alderman Sawyer expressed at this latest, or one of the past mayoral forums here in Chicago. Oh. Let me get a little better sound here. Seems like it's a little bit low. Let me see. Oh, here we go. There we go. I was really disappointed. And then working in the inside, I couldn't wait because So now that was a statement that he made that indicated that he was disappointed with the current mayor, Lori Lightfoot, first black female mayor of the city of Chicago. And as a member of the city council, they found her not to be responsive. So we presume that's one of the reasons why he's choosing to run against her and choosing to take over that top spot. We tend to look at things according to that artificial construct of race. Well, if someone looks like me, they're going to treat me well, and therefore I can trust them. That's not always the case. We just saw that with the black police officers that in Memphis that beat to death a black man. So, Kareem, do you think we should stop thinking racially because someone who happens to have the same skin color doesn't necessarily have the same values? What do you think we should really focus on now? Is it still a racial thing? Will everybody vote your color and then your color will get treated well? What do you think about that?
Well, you know, the problems that we are faced with. One term in office will not eradicate those structural problems that we are faced with. The problems that Mayor Lightfoot is faced with did not begin at her term. These are decades old problems. And one term in office, I don't believe is enough to correct the structural problem. You hear me saying structure. It is structured into the system. The system. Unfair. Okay. I'll give you one example. The unfair taxation concerning education. In a lot of cities, education is funded by property taxes. And for those that live in an affluent area, they can afford to pay more in property taxes. That's more funds to fund that school or the educational pursuits in that area. But if you're living in a depressed area where property values are down, there's an inadequate amount of taxes is provided for education. Now, you mentioned the 50 schools that were shut down. I venture to say that I believe they were inadequately funded. Inadequately funded.
Yeah.
So I believe that the taxes should be leveled across the board on such an important issue as education. And education, it should be level. There should be an equalization of taxes for education. But if you live in a poor, depressed area, your funding for property taxes is somewhat limited. It is limited, and that limits the funding for the education in that district or in that area. That's a structural problem. That's a problem in the tax system, and it requires more than one term in office to correct a decades-old structural problem. You know, so someone can be in office for 3 years And then others can say, we're still dealing with, we're still suffering under the conditions that he or she was presented with when they first came into office. Well, the problem is bigger than 3 years. It takes more than 3 years. You need the cooperation of everyone else involved in that, civic responsibility. You need people to work with you, and because this is a long-term problem here. It's not just one term in office. I somewhat become perturbed when I hear people that's running for office. They act as if that these problems did not exist prior to a person that is that is presently holding office.
Yes.
Are we running to? Yeah.
Like we suddenly got woke. We suddenly got, this didn't just happen.
Yeah. This didn't just happen. And so let's roll up our sleeves and work together to solve these issues, to solve these structural problems that we've had for decades, for a long time. You know, it's the structure, idiot. You know,
yeah,
it's the structure. It's not the person. So you know, now I'm not against people running for office if you believe that you can do a much better job. But let's be fair. Let's not couch it in that person wasn't trying or they were deficient because they couldn't correct almost a half a century old problem. Our housing. You know, I ride through St. Louis, and I ride through the areas that I grew up in. The housing is falling in on itself. Look at a vacant house falling in.
What's
falling off of it? Bricks falling from the side. Well, someone owned that house 75 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm talking about old house. So there has to be a rebuilding of the structure of this country. Old, I mean, how, my God. The house was built in 1875, and we're in 2023. And we want to blame the people that presently live there. But that's an old house. That's old structure. It's falling in on itself. Someone owns that property.
Right.
Put the pressure on them to bring their property up to par.
Or you know, there's reasons why people don't. That's the thing. They're, like we were talking about, when an industry leaves, when jobs leave, people don't have the income to maintain their homes, and so they fall apart. So
That
means you have to make it possible for them to be able to keep their property up. You can't, again, penalize people for being broke, for being poor, for not having an income. That can't be a crime. That can't be a thing that we attack people for when the part of the structure, as you said. And I just found out, I guess, the southeast side of Chicago, the South Shore area, which there was a time that was a flourishing middle-class community. I believe it was the steel industry where a lot of people were working. Well, you know, those factories closed, and so what happened now is it's deeply crime-ridden. And the homes are falling apart, beautiful homes. Well, you know, if you don't take care of a home over 50 years and you don't make any repairs, yeah, what does it look like, you know? Just like you said with the pipes. I mean, if things are falling apart and the money isn't flowing the way it used to because industry is gone, and then the industry that is here, maybe it's a new high-tech industry, but your schools aren't preparing students for those high-tech positions. So now you have those jobs going to other countries where they did invest in their children's education. Then here again, we have created the poverty. We've created the despair, and we don't have anything in place to change it if we still haven't changed the school system that isn't prepared to teach. And then if you have so many people with so many social problems, emotional problems that haven't been resolved, then you can't even make schools that safe haven that it needs to be so the children can come there and learn and feel validated, you know, feel like what they're learning is relevant when they know it's not, when they know after they spend 8 hours coming home with knowledge that has absolutely nothing to do with their reality and is not preparing them for anything that's going to change their lives. So we have to be honest with each other about that. We've got a caller on the line. It's time for us to take a break, and our guest will be coming up shortly. So hold on. Area code 773-450. We'll give you an opportunity to speak. And
yeah, we have a caller here on AM 360 board, 724. We'll open your lines at the appropriate time.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and I believe our guest has arrived, and we will be right back after this quick break. So we want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back in just one moment. So stay with us.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection.
Mondays at 5 p.m. and Tuesdays at 12 noon on cable TV, Channel 19 in Chicago. And other cities, check your local cable listings.
Crime in Chicago continues to increase. Communities and politicians must come together to make a change. No one person can solve these problems by themselves, but I believe together we can make progress. Let's provide job training, economic growth, and invest into our 77 communities. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for mayor.
I'm Beata, your holistic life coach. These days, it's more important than ever to work on your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Are you consciously breathing deeply in stressful moments? Do you have a plan or daily routine to maintain balance in your awesome body? Are you struggling to be disciplined in your eating habits? When you partner with me, I'll help you develop a personalized health plan that works for your particular lifestyle. You can find out more about me at yourholisticlifecoach.com, where you can also review my 3-step protocol to guide you to abundant health. That's yourholisticlifecoach.com, and I'm Viato.
Global Radio TV. I'm Naima Latif, along with our co-host Kareem Hamid and our American Muslim 360 family on the other radio channel. And we are joined right now by one of the 9 candidates that is running for mayor of the city of Chicago. He is the son of a former mayor of the city of Chicago, Mayor Eugene Sawyer, who came into that position amidst a very turbulent time. The city was in mourning for the late Mayor Harold Washington. But, of course, he took the helm and took leadership, and now his son, following in his footsteps as an elected official, alderman of the 6th Ward of the city of Chicago, and as we've been talking about some of the challenges in major cities, we'll hear more about what Alderman Roderick Sawyer has for Chicago and the vision to revitalize its economy, to handle the challenges of its crime and public safety, and the crisis in education. Of course, we know he's not flying around with a cape and an S on his chest and Superman going to make everything go away with a wave of his hand, but as an elected official, there is something that can be done. So let's welcome to our show 6th Ward Alderman of the City of Chicago, Roderick Sawyer. Thank you so much for joining us on the Female Solution. Make sure you unmute your phone. Oh, we're still not hearing you. I'm sorry, we're still not hearing sound. Sorry, we're still not hearing sound.
Keep unmuted.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, so we are back, and we have opened the mic of our guest. We're having a little bit of a sound issue, still can't hear. However, while we're waiting on that to correct, let me share with you again some statements from from the mayoral forum that was held on the west side of Chicago, and it addressed a number of issues having to do with many of the challenges that citizens face in this city. So, Alderman Sawyer, for some reason, we're still not picking up sound. Make sure all of your mics are unmuted. And I did send you a link to StreamYard in case you want to join us visually, if you're able to do that. That should be in your email from news@onaireverywhere.com. But in the meantime, we're going to share some of his statements, recent mayoral forum, and there have been many. As a matter of fact, there was one last night on WTTW. WGN had one as well. So there have been a number of forums that have given the candidates an opportunity to express their views. And so people are now looking to hear what are some of the differences in perspective. So now let's hear another perspective from Alderman Roderick Sawyer. All right, so now this, of course, this was a forum at the New Pilgrim Mount Baptist Church.
This would be a fine opportunity for us to start looking at rebuilding our Hispanic community, one that's similar to the other side. They were present like President Marco Park and Asia. And all the areas that we think that we don't have any based on our resources. We do that by having what we're not supporting. We want to make sure that we have more money in the hands of those that are unhoused.
Okay, and that was Alderman Roderick Sawyer speaking on the issue of housing and homelessness at the new Mount Pilgrim Mount Baptist Church mayoral forum. And as we've been talking about, one of the main issues that cities face is the growing housing crisis, people not being able to afford a roof over their head. And this is all connected. It's all connected to industry being in the city, hiring people can make a living wage so they can pay for the roof over their head, so they can pay to keep their house in decent condition and livable condition. And all of the things that are necessary in maintaining a neighborhood. So when industry leaves, that changes everything. And Alderman Sawyer, we've been talking this morning about how a leader of a city, especially a global city like Chicago, one has to have a worldview and understanding that when industry goes abroad, it's going to affect the city. So how do we attract and maintain industry when it's affected by everything from labor, which, you know, if businesses choose to relocate abroad because they can pay less wages, that's going to make an impact. It's affected by issues such as crime. Businesses aren't going to stay if they don't feel safe, if there is a feeling of uncertainty that they can be protected from or not experience violence and criminal behavior, theft, and all of those things that can certainly destroy profits. And they're affected by the preparedness of the local labor force. Are we preparing good workers? Are we preparing skilled labor? Are we preparing people who have work ethic? So all of these things have an impact. And when industries go abroad, that means you have hundreds and thousands of people who lose jobs, which means no money circulating, which means the cities deteriorate. So Alderman Sawyer, I'm hoping our sound system is working. We can hear you clearly. First of all, what do you see that the current mayor did not do that you would do differently when it comes to attracting the kind of industry to this global city that would employ numbers of people from a neighborhood that could begin to revitalize the neighborhood? You know, on the southeast side, you know, a lot of people lost jobs in the steel industry and, you know, the meatpacking industry, all these major industries that were part of the financial backbone of the city are gone. And so something has to replace them, and people have to be prepared for whatever new industries come. What do you see as a possibility in your administration, if elected mayor, to attract new industry and have people prepared for the job that they produce? We're still not able to hear. For whatever reason, Kareem, are you there? Maybe it's me.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, you're here? Okay. I have his mic open, but we're not getting sound. So I'm going to ask you to call back in if you can. For some reason, we're not able to. I'm going to open a mic and get a question. If you're able to connect with us by phone, I think he may be on a different kind of phone, but for some reason the sound is not coming through. I'm going to open the mic for area code 773-436. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your question or comment. Your mic is open.
Oh, hallelujah, greetings, Global Transformers.
Yes.
Mama D here.
Mama D, thank you for joining us.
Mama D.
Oh, yes, how are you?
Excellent,
you know, your father, when he was acting mayor, he met with me before he became acting mayor, and I said, oh, my goodness, his card said Secretary Pro Temp. I said, if something happens to Mayor Washington, Mayor Sawyer will be the next mayor. So when he signed December 30th, 1987, your father signed a resolution for me, and he blew it up and put it in the glass cases, in that glass case of City Hall. I think that might have been one of the first resolutions that, not a resolution, it was a proclamation that he ever drafted. And as I said before he became mayor, I met with him regarding his support, Emmett Till Road, because his legacy had been buried for 30 years, and I wanted to do that. So I met with your father regarding it. So my question to you is, you serve on the Reparations Committee, and that committee was spearheaded by affectionately known as Dr. Wilson, Willie Wilson, and he, when Mayor Lightfoot gutted that resolution as it had first been presented, there was a march in Cobra, and some other people marched against her for doing that. And that $500 a month, no questions asked, came out of that reparations committee. Now, my question to you is, how did that go down, and you serving on that committee along with Alderman Stephanie Coleman, how did that happen? You know, how did that $500 become for everybody, including sanctuary settlers, when it came out of the reparations committee that was dealing with NAAAs, Indigenous Native American Africans?
We're not able to get your sound. For whatever reason, we're not able to hear you. If you're able to call in using another phone, because whatever reason your phone is not giving a sound.
Is that my phone or his phone?
Your phone. We hear you fine. I do not hear him. So,
well, as I said, there was a march against her because of those changes that was made to that reparations ordinance. Now, I know that Mayor Sawyer was there when they did the reparations for the torture victims. And it was not confined to a check. It was not only the check, it was wellness and counseling for the torture victims and their families. You have to teach about it in school. Plus it had the money. And so many people think that just give me a check. But reparations is about making a people whole. We have not been made whole from 345 years of federal laws against us as a racial group. And I don't comprehend why we tell ourselves we're just like everybody else when clearly we are not. Everyone that arrived in America, everyone that came here, came from a country with a land and a language, and they came by choice. We are the exception to the rule, being kidnapped from a continent. It's different from a country. And coming in chains is not the same as coming by choice with a land and a language. And now that we have this
Mama
bilingual, yes, can you hear me? I can hear you now.
Yes. Are you referring, when you say a resolution concerning torture, are you speaking of the revelation that the Chicago Police Department had set up a kind of a warehouse-like, and they were
I'm talking about a reparations with dollars amount. I don't remember how many thousands were given to each torture victim that was tortured in holding cells. By electric shocks being put to their genitalia area and other things in holding cells by a commander of the police called John Byrd. This went on for about 20 years, the torture of black men, torture of black men in holding cells. And so as a result of that, the city council gave them reparations. And the reparations included, Alderman Sawyer can tell you how much, but it was up in the thousands of dollars in this settlement that Chicago City Council did for reparations to repair the damage that had been done to these men over a 20-year period while they was being held in holding cells under Commander Burge, confessing to crimes that they did not commit because the torture was so great. I heard one of the people testify that his eyes literally just bugged out of his head, that pain when they did the black box torture to their genital area.
So Mama D, I have a vague memory of that period of time, and they're still, you know, every now and then there'll be another person who's released, who's found, you know, the DNA evidence found that he was not guilty and he'd been tortured into a confession. I mean, it just keeps happening. But I don't remember the details as to what legislation was being presented to pay the victims of torture. So are you saying that there was legislation prepared to address that with a dollar amount?
That's exactly what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. I'm saying not only did they use the word torture, but they gave money. They won the case. It was called Reparations Won, a case study in police torture, racism, and the movement for justice in Chicago. And this is a manual that, first of all, they must teach about this torture in schools. They got, it was way over $20,000 in settlement money, and they got counseling for not only the torture victims, but also for their families. And so there was a number of other things that came. And yes, the word torture was used, and the city council of the city of Chicago paid out and made these other settlements that didn't have to do with just money alone. And they when they teach it in school, they have a photograph of that torture box that the commander had brought that idea back from Vietnam when they tortured people with this electrical box with wires on it, and they put it on the genitalia of black men as part of the torture. And when they're teaching this in school, they have an actual photograph of the torture in their handout.
So Mama D,
I'm looking right.
So Mama D, was the question about what happened to the reparations dollars that were supposed to be paid to the torture victims? Was it something that the city council was supposed to vote on? Was it something that the mayor was supposed
they
to?
They did vote on it. They vote on it, and they settled it, and they got, I'm looking at the manual for it right now, the manual that they must teach in schools. I got a copy of the manual right here, and some of the torture, some of the table of contents. It says the unit. It says in part two, the role of police and individual rights. John Birds and people tortured by police in Chicago. Community response to police torture. Official reactions to Chicago police torture. Moving forward, strategies for building positive police community relations.
Okay, so Mama D, we got our sound issue corrected, I believe. So now Alderman Spratling, we can hear you now.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, can you hear us now?
I can hear you fine.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for trying again. We appreciate it.
I've been on here since the beginning. You're right. I've been trying to get on. Thank you.
Okay, well, I appreciate so much. Yeah, for some reason, your other connection was not, we weren't able to hear anything. So now, we are now joined by Alderman Roderick Sawyer, who is challenging Mayor Lori Lightfoot for leadership of Chicago, along with eight other candidates. But Alderman Sawyer, as you heard, the question that was posed had to do with the police torture issue. And were you a part of that vote?
I was one of the lead co-sponsors on the Burge torture resolution.
Yes.
So
how much money?
Well, this is the. Let me just go back to that. With the Burge torture situation, there was not direct income, the direct payments to individuals. There was money paid for the torture center and that alone. There was not money for individuals, and it was supposed to be discussed further along. We're still trying to fight this fight. I've been fighting this fight for years now, both on that front and on the reparations front that I've been working on for the last two or three years in council, thinking that was going to be something that would not be a heavy lift, considering we had an African-American mayor and we have the issues that are going on. And understanding that the city, particularly for the descendants of enslaved Africans, are in need of severe repair. And I was hoping that would be, again, an easy lift, but the mayor was having none of that and just did not want to, did not acknowledge reparations, didn't think it was a thing. And I was just really disappointed in that, and it was just very frustrating.
Well, my question was two different things. I have a copy of that whole settlement that went down for the torture victims dealing with Burge that had nothing to do with the reparations resolution that came later on. These were two separate things.
I agree. I was a part of both of them, yes.
Well, Mama D, hold that thought for a second. We got to take another quick break. But when we come back, I want to take a look at something that, and we've got another caller on the line. I want to also take a look at, you know, an ongoing issue with the whole policing conflict that we are going through now. Are there still numbers of people who are perhaps wrongfully convicted behind bars, jail or whatever, and what would be the strategy to get them out, and who pays when there are large settlements when it's discovered that someone has been violated and the city has to pay? Where does the money come from? We're going to talk about that. When we come back, we're going to take our last quick break, and then we'll be right back. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, along with our co-host, Kareem Hamid. And if you're on our switchboard now and have a question for our guest, please press 1 to light your number up on our switchboard, and we'll come right to you and get your thoughts. We'll be right back after this quick break, so stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with me.
Do you worry about finances, family, health, job, relationships? Are you in pain? Do you feel stuck? If you answered yes to any of these questions, help is available. Don't worry, you're not alone. It's part of the human process. You only feel this way because you haven't mastered the voices in your head. No hype, just down-to-earth, solid, workable tools and techniques that you can practice daily. It's really food for the soul. Whether you want to learn how not to worry about anything, reverse type 2 diabetes, publish a book, promote your product or service, or just make extra money. To take advantage of the deal of the day, go to ZeldaSpeaks.com or call 312-409-6619. Mention promo code The Female Solution and get free shipping. That's ZeldaSpeaks.com or 312-409-6619. Stop worrying today. Visit ZeldaSpeaks.com.
Are you constantly arguing with your spouse? Are your children misbehaving and acting out? Is someone in your family abusing drugs? Have you been the victim of domestic violence? Are you grieving over the loss of a loved one? Let us help you restore serenity to your life. At Serenity Family Social Services, we understand that good mental health is the result of emotional well-being. Our goal is to assist you and your family in removing emotional distress and restoring harmony and balance to your lives. We offer individual, couples, and family counseling. I'm Howard Williams, CEO of Serenity Family Social Services. Call us today at 312-315-4820. That's 312-315-4820.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
Our kids are the future and should not be left behind. One person should not decide what is the best for our 77 communities. Politicians must work together for our kids' best interests. They deserve a safe education with resources that meet every student need. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for mayor.
And we are back. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, along with our co-host, Kareem Hamid. And our guest today is mayoral candidate Alderman Roderick Sawyer, running the 6th Ward and now looking to run the entire city of Chicago. So, Alderman Sawyer, we're so grateful that you're with us to be able to address some of these major issues. One of the things that I did want to ask, because we have seen several settlements as a result of, you know, we could say police misconduct, who pays those $1 million settlements? Where does that money come from when that's awarded to a group or individuals?
You do. I do. All Chicagoans pay for that. We all pay.
So it comes out of the taxpayers' money.
That is correct.
Now, the suggestion has been made that perhaps it should come out of the police pension fund. It should be paid by those that have perpetrated the crime. Is that part of being talked about with even the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act that, you know, Congress is considering now? And do we have anything like that on the table in city council to address where those dollars should come out of?
The attorney general has been discussing this for some time about authorizing the police officers to have their own insurance policies. And it's something that we probably need to look at a little closer, at least what we would call a reinsurance or an insurance policy over and above a certain level. For example, the city of Chicago would pay $1 up until whatever, and then it would be incumbent upon the officers based on the policies that they receive, that they purchase, to be, you know, anything over that. Now, I'm a lawyer. I've been a lawyer 30-some-odd years now, and when I was actively practicing, you know, we were required to carry professional liability insurance. And it's really the same thing. You know, police officers, the function of police officers is really a serious job. And in these serious professions, they all have insurance. Accountants, lawyers, other professions that have high consequences when mistakes are made. And they should be insured. And we should be looking at that very, very closely. And I know Attorney General Raul has been looking at this, and something that I have looked at as well, and think that we should be diving into that a little further.
Another thing when it comes to the issue of people who are basically by the police who are under extreme stress, the post-traumatic stress disorder, the overreacting. Is there a way to make it a policy that officers have to receive regular psychological evaluations and counseling and therapy so that they are not emotionally damaged and still continuing to work, because to admit that they are overcome with stress could jeopardize their job? And yet they have some of the most high stress jobs is based on the fact that they see the worst in human behavior every day, and there is no de-stressor component to the job that I'm aware of. And I perceive that that's why a lot of the overreaction happens. I think it's more than just police training. Some of these people have some serious PTSD issues, and if they come to this job out of the military service, well, you know, the military teaches you to kill. That's not the same job as an officer that's supposed to be helping to provide public safety and ensure people obey traffic laws. A traffic stop is not the same thing as stopping somebody from robbing a store at gunpoint, and yet they respond the same way. So what are your thoughts on that? How do we make sure they get the psychological help they need and identify those that really shouldn't be there?
We have to do better in taking care of our officers. That is correct. I believe that there's been an effort afoot right now to have therapists and behavioral health professionals in every district station. And here's the challenge with that. The issue of therapy and psychologists and psychiatrists are probably one of the most high demand in any profession in the country right now. And quite honestly, we're having a problem filling that talent, because it is a highly desirable job right now, and we can't find enough therapists to fill the spaces. So we are
really,
you know, Yes, that's absolutely correct. You know, a lot of people, you know, when they say that, and I agree with it, but the reality is that we're really having a difficult time, not just there. I'm also chair of the Health and Human Relations Committee. Mental health services, we cannot find people to staff our clinics that we have right now. So it is a really, really a difficult situation right now that, you know, a lot of people aren't aware of. And I just wanted to make sure that I'm glad that I'm talking to you today, because a lot of people just yell the mantra, open up the clinics, you know, get more help. And it's a great, you know, mantra. But if we don't have people to fill the spaces where people can come in and get the help, we're not doing anything. So I was at a high school the other day and just telling them, if you're looking for a career job, you know, career position right now, therapists, psychology are the ones to go into right now, because there are not enough candidates to fill the needs, not just here in Chicago, but all across the country.
Well, that brings up another issue, and I'll go to our phone lines in just a second, but that brings up another issue. We've got a whole bunch of things that need to be done.
Yes.
We got a whole bunch of people who need work and a whole bunch of people who would be willing to be trained to do the jobs that need to be done. How can a mayor coordinate all this? The people who need work, the institutions that can train them for the work, and then the work that needs to be done. Based on what's needed, there shouldn't be any unemployment at all, because there's something for everybody to do. So, well, as mayor, how would you go about that process of matching people to the jobs, the training, the places, and creating the means where it can all work together?
This is an interesting period in time, and I think I've not seen this recently as an adult, quite honestly, where we have more jobs than people applying for them. There are jobs, as you stated, there are jobs right now that people can acquire right now, today. We have training programs like the Chicago Cook Workforce Partnership that will train and place you in positions today, get you ready for employment. I have more people that walk up to me and ask me, Alderman, can I get a job? And when I ask that first question, they look at me like I'm crazy. I say, of course, have you applied for one? And they always tell me no. I say, well, why don't you go to the website? I mean, you can do it on your phone. Go to citychicago.org. You can go to the county, the CTA, the Park District. They're all hiring right now, and they're looking for people. So I guess what I'm saying is that as mayor, we can do, you know, we can open every opportunity that we can to have people have the opportunity to seek employment, but you have to seek employment. It's something affirmative that has to be done, and I guess we have to do better in assisting people to help themselves, if you will. And that's really been the biggest challenge right now, people not doing what's necessary to apply for these positions right now, because we do have a lot of them, and we need them filled.
I think, and I'm gonna take callers, I'm gonna take you in this order, 779-801, 706-202, 773-737. And anybody else on our switchboard, please press 1 in order to ask a question of mayoral candidate Alderman Roderick Sawyer. And please keep your questions brief, because we just got a few more minutes left, and I want to make sure he gets enough time to answer questions. So let me go to 779-801. Your mic is open. Please introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience and give us your questions for Alderman Sawyer.
Grand Rising, good morning, Alderman Sawyer. My name is Helen Edmond, and I have noticed in the city of Chicago there's a big problem with dog poop, people not being sane in terms of how they exercise their dog, not being responsible. Is there a way that we can have that every citizen that applies for a dog license gets a dog DNA test so that we can match up DNA of the dog poop so that we can get money from them people? That would be a great tax base. that it would allow the children to play in the park and people to walk in the parks, you know. I mean, it's a real need. Children can't even walk, play in the park because parents have stopped them because they know there might be some dog poop out there. I've seen playgrounds full of dog poop. So it really disturbs me personally.
I do share your pain. I mean, I understand and share your pain. As a dog owner, and my dog is right here by my side right now, I understand that. And I'm always a responsible dog owner. When I take my dog out for walks, you know, I have my bags and I do, you know, pick up anything that he might leave off in the street, in the grass. But, you know, obviously, you know, we don't have the resources to do that. I wish we could. We just don't have the resources to test dog poop for DNA and associate it with a particular dog. But I feel your pain. I do understand, and we all have to do better and making sure. If you want to be, you have the responsibility of having your pet, you know, you should be that responsible person and clean up after it. And we try, you know, we, as aldermen, I put out signs. I give signs to residents all over the ward, and a lot of my colleagues do the same. We're trying to encourage people to do that, but quite honestly, we just don't have the resources to fulfill that need. Sorry.
Well, Alderman, is that another job opportunity? I mean, or even a business opportunity? Somebody going to the business of just picking up poop? Hey, there you go. Somebody who's ingenuous.
Well, I mean, I guess in order for it to make money, we would have to be someone that would be enforcing those that don't clean up, because you know, you have to find a way to pay for that, and the way to pay for it is to find those that don't comply. And, you know, that would require somebody walking around all day just following dogs around. I don't know if that would be a job, a highly desirable job, or one that we would, you know, dispense money for, because, you know, we're dealing with crime and safety right now. And I understand that's a quality of life issue that's important. But, you know, we have to rank those and have to prioritize the ones that we have to get at first. And safety is probably obviously is the number one.
Well, could somebody with a janitorial business get a contract with the city to do cleaning if they wanted to specialize in that kind of, you know, sanitation service? Is there a process where they could actually do that and say, well, look, I will handle this problem, and it's a business. Is that a possibility?
You know, obviously everything is possible. I guess we would have to see if there's, you know, we have money available for that. You know, where are we talking about? Are we talking about just some parks on city property? Are we talking about everywhere? You know, are people just walking up and down the streets picking up poop? Could they be doing something else? Could they, you know, because I pay people, you know, a lot of money just in my ward to pick up garbage over and above what Streets and Sanitation does. And last year, to the tune of almost $50,000, that I pay additional people to clean up. So that would be something that would be over and above that. And, you know, I just don't, you know, in the privatization of things, I just know that safety and other, and even on cleanliness issues, I know that we have a lot of things that we need to be doing. And, it, you know, it could be part of a conversation, but I just don't think it's important, but it's not of the highest priority right now.
Okay. Well, let's go to area code 706-202. Your mic is open. Introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience and give us your question for Alderman Roderick Sawyer.
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu.
This is Brother Kwame Sunhorse, and I sit here in stolen lands in Edenton, Georgia, the Muskogee Creek. You know, we're talking about reparations and ACL, no, February 1st was looked at as Freedom Day.
Yes.
And that's when Lincoln signed the 13th Amendment. And every state, if I think you said you were an attorney also, every state has to had to ratify the 13th Amendment. Mississippi was the last state to ratify it in 2000. The thing that I'm looking at is if that 13th Amendment says neither slavery nor indentured servitude, except if you're duly convicted of a crime, then what ACLU has just done with the University of Chicago, June, you can look it up on ACLU, on June 2022 last year, they came up And what they have is what they're looking at is captive labor. Captive labor, exploitation of incarcerated workers. That is the new slave trade. We're asking about reparations and looking at that. But until we go in and change those words within the 13th Amendment, because if there's a war on crime, then that means that we have what happened right after slavery was peonage. Peonage and convict leasing. So what we're now doing is that, and those ones that were hired to go about patrolling the roads for those people that were free, and those are the people that's driving cars and wearing badges and guns, it's the same system. They just enhanced it into make it into modern day times. What we have now is a modern-day slave trade traded on the stock market for private prisons.
So that's another issue that I would like to see handled the way the criminal justice system has been turned into a business. And thank you for bringing it up, Baba Kwame, because, you know, that's, again, something happening in cities across the nation. So Alderman Sawyer, people, many of the people that are in the jails, I think it was brought out in last night's forum, so many people are really dealing with mental health issues. And yet, you know, jail, prison, you know, you got to pay to get out. That becomes a business, you know, financial source. How can we remove the intention of the jail system as being an income generator for cities so that we can really deal with the problems people have, the mental health problems and the financial problems people have, rather than just jailing them and making money off of their misery? And as Kwame said, really it becomes an extension of the slave system, because they're also, once they get in prison, they're also working for little or no money for these major industries. Is there a way to reverse that?
Well, obviously it would be beyond a city level. That would be a state and federal plan. But what we need to be doing is what we do is, as least with our returning citizens, is making sure they feel welcome, making sure they have all the opportunity and information that they need. The first thing they always need when coming back into to the neighborhoods is identification. Is obvious, that's number first and foremost. And something so simple, you would think that it was an easy thing that they would do it before they left the prison system, but they don't do that. So we need to make sure that they have proper identification. We want to make sure then that they are re-assimilated back into society, getting training, getting any kind of additional educational programs or training programs that they may require. We have to make sure that they're, you know, brought back into community so that they don't participate in recidivism. You want to make sure that they understand, they paid their debts to society, they've accomplished that, and now they need to be productive citizens, and we need to help every step of the way. I do believe in accountability, but I also believe in redemption. We need to make sure that once a person pays their debt to society, that we embrace them and bring them back into the fold and give them everything necessary to be productive citizens.
We're here on Facebook. We've got a comment. Zelda Robinson says, Mike is on target. There's as much poop as there is crime. Remove red light cameras and increase poop fines, and Chicago's traffic problem is gone. Well, she does make a point.
Well, I have.
She does
make
a point about the red light cameras, though.
You know, I introduced
a lot of
ordinance.
People are angry about that.
I've introduced an ordinance back in 2014 phasing out the speed and red light cameras. You know, I obviously didn't get much traction, and the administration was against it at the time. But I mean, I get it. But and the way I wanted to do it was to phase it out so that we can be responsible in finding replacement revenue sources. I don't know if the poop thing is going to make up that kind of money. We're talking about between the red and speed cameras, we're talking about over $150 million a year we're receiving. So we have to make sure that when we do get, I am in favor of getting rid of all speed cameras. And most red light cameras, with the exception of places where have that have high incidence of fatalities due to crashes. I want to make sure those areas are probably still covered, but every other area, they need to go. But we have to be responsible to make sure that we can replace that income so that we're not, you know, over-relying on other regressive forms of collecting money, like property taxes or more other fines and fees, increasing them to the, you know, to the expense of not having red or speed light cameras any longer.
Well, what are your thoughts on what? Well, Aaliyah, let me let you go ahead. Our co-host Kareem Hamid, go right ahead with your question,
yes,
Alderman Sawyer.
Yes. What actions would you implement to encourage more personal responsibility, more civic responsibility among the citizens of Chicago? You know, St. Louis is my city. I have to have a sense of ownership. Mm-hmm. And with ownership comes civic responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to hear from you. How could you encourage more civic responsibility, more personal responsibility?
In that area, I would lead by example. I do lead by example. You know, children can't be what they can't see. You want to make sure that you show people, not just talk about it, you show people the importance of personal and civic responsibility. That means going out in communities, you know, meeting people face-to-face, talking to them about issues that are truly important as it relates to personal and civic responsibility. You know, not, you know, just talking about it from the fifth floor doesn't do anything unless you go to Madison and Pulaski and start walking the streets and talking to people, unless you're going to 79th and Cottage and just standing on that corner and meeting people where they are and showing them this is how we need to act, this is how we need to perform, and this is how we need to engage with people so that we can be a stronger community. You can't do it, you know, you can't do it from a perch. You have to do it on the ground. You have to do it walking and talking with people that are disenfranchised, that feeling that they're not being heard, they're not being responded to. You have to do it that way. And if you're not doing it that way, you're just spinning wheels and you're not doing anything.
Well, we certainly appreciate your coming, and thank you so much for that question, Kareem Hamid. And thank you to all who asked questions and listened in and called in, and feel free to continue to watch as we listen to those who want to lead the city of Chicago. I'm Naima Lateef. Thank you again, Alderman Roderick Sawyer. All the best
you.
To you. Looking forward to hearing more from you as these forums continue.
I've gained much from this interview. Let me go back. Close this mic.
Okay. And can you hear me now?
I can still hear you.
Oh, great. Okay. Yes. One last thing. We do want to make sure that people know where to reach you for more information. What is your website that people can find out
sure.
more about?
Sawyer. Mm-hmm. It's Sawyer for the number 4 Chicago. Sawyer4Chicago.com. Please reach
Sawyer
out.
For Chicago. And one last quick question.
Sure.
Are you open to the idea of police no longer making any traffic stops at all if all traffic was held electronically, whether it's speeding or you know, stop lights or whatever the case may be? But if that particular aspect of policing was eliminated and traffic violations were strictly held electronically, is that a possibility, or do you foresee that could possibly be abused?
I would see the nature of abuse in that severely. I just would not. Again, we just talked about eliminating speed and red light cameras. I think expanding that process and the due process aspect of electronic surveillance is a bit challenging to me, and I think that
right.
people don't really like it. And I think I quite honestly rather I wish police officers would go back to traffic stops because you know, and with the understanding of making sure that they do them correctly and constitutionally compliant. But you know, electronic surveillance, I still have issues with that.
Yeah, yes, yeah, not easy to talk yourself out of a ticket
electronically,
with a machine.
That's right.
Well, we do thank you for all your work as alderman and all your service, and we thank you for stepping forward to shed some light on the city of Chicago and this mayor's race, and we look forward to hearing more from you.
Thank you very much. Thanks. You have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I'm Naima Latif, and we will see you tomorrow. Join us for Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. Until then, continue to shine your light.
We've come to the end of our show today, but you can hear every show in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/the-female-solution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Xiexie. India, Zanyaba. Japan, Arigato. Korea, Kamsahamnida. Russia, Spasiba. Germany, Danke. Poland, Dziękuję. France, Merci. Spain, gracias. Italy, grazie. Egypt, shukran. Ghana, merci. Nigeria, eshe. South Africa, ngiyabonga. Senegal, jeret. Kenya, asante. Israel, toda. Pakistan, shukriya. Afghanistan, Tashakur. Saudi Arabia, shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you. And may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessing.